Friends, at the very outset, we extend to you very, very happy New Year greetings. Although belated, calendar-wise, theosophically speaking, theosophical New Year falls on the 4th of January every year. Now, you have gone through the reading today and see what it says. The birth of an Arhat or a Dhyani thrills the entire nature. Look at that. Behold the mellow light that floods the eastern sky. In signs of breeze, both heaven and earth unite. From the fourfold manifested powers, a chant of love arises out. Both from the flaming fire and flowing water and sweet smelling earth, rushing wind. All nature's wordless voice in thousand tones arises to proclaim, joy unto you, ye, woman of Nialga. It is joy to us. The entire nature thrills, and then nature is speaking to us. Look here, a Jnani is born. The birth of a Jnani can do so much to nature, because he is part of nature, having even gone beyond the well of compassion. See, he says, now bend thy head and listen well, O Bodhisattva. Compassion speaks. It's the law of laws, eternal harmony, alias said, shortness of universes, etc. Having passed all that, he has gone beyond. And it says, yes, the whole nature thrills. Now, see, this is the indication that when a Jnani is born, the entire nature is, as it were, thrilled. It depicts a man, a creator, can. See, having become a Jnani, he becomes a creator. But in creation, in what sense? He is there only to help humanity. See, through all the altruistic means and the compassion to all that lives and breathes, then he becomes really a creator. Now, then what exactly we will see before we go further about the creating aspect of the man, the power of creation within him, then we will see what is man. When you see a man, what do you find? You only see the pigmentation of his skin, red, white, brown, black, etc. And also, how do you reckon him? You reckon him in terms of height, weight, tall or fat or thin. Is all you know. Do you know what is his motive? What is he thinking about us? But yet, you see, we are told by the ancient catechism, man know thyself. But how can you know yourself? Unless we thoroughly analyze and find out the ancient in what sense they said, man, know thyself. When you say, man, know thyself, that means we have to go beyond the body and find out what we are. What are our pedigrees? Do we know anything about the earthly pedigree? Excepting the color of the skin? Much less our psychic and intellectual pedigrees and spiritual pedigrees. Therefore, in what sense is ancient said that we should go beyond that mortal man to think about there is somebody else occupying this body for the purpose of evolution and for the purpose of garnering experience in this world? The whole universe exists for the emancipation and evolution of soul. This is important for us to understand. Unless we understand that man is not a body, but he's beyond the body. If you try to analyze that man is not a body, but yet there is something beyond the body, not even our astral body, which is changing all the time, except the highest aspect of it. As the pranic current often changes according to our moods. And then the desire principle changes. As a child, we were after chocolates. Maybe during adolescent age, we were thinking about other sex. And then as you grow up, what happens? We're changing our ideas, or we have changed our mind, you say. But yet, throughout all this is the continuity of consciousness. That means only those things that continue in us is the continuing of consciousness. That means that when you get up in the morning after dreaming and all that, you feel, I am the same thing. But there is that aspect in man which is continuous throughout the sleep and dreams, and yet we are able to identify ourselves as I am. This is important for us. See, this which we can verify in our own selves. Therefore, when we say, man, you know thyself, we have to find out that there is something beyond the body. That is fundamentally, we have to identify that there is something more behind the body. That can be only the continuing entity, which bridges the gap of sleep and dreams, life and death, etc. Now, Yasvi points out, universe is macrocosm. And then thinking man is microcosm. But if you see, the whole microcosm comes as a little puny man. It's a reflection. Well, see, macrocosm is the only reality. When you say microcosm, it's a reflection. When you go and look into the mirror, what do you see? Your image. It's not real. Therefore, in order to find the reality, see, man, the image, has to become one with that clear. That means, unless this consciousness merges with universal consciousness, one consciousness, for which he has to so live and breathe, that he is able to understand the purpose of evolution itself. That he is to serve mankind. To live to benefit mankind is the first thing. Therefore, unless we understand the very purpose of living here through our evolutionary process is to help man, to serve humanity, loka sankraha. Loka sankraha. Therefore, from that point of view, we must understand as divine beings. Unless we take the path of altruism and compassion to all that lives and breathes, we can't attain to more than mere man. Now, here, unless we go through certain quotations to find out whence we are, why are we here, and what is the very purpose in life. Therefore, that is there in your handouts. The first handout, see, this is from Sikh Doctrine, Volume 1, page 273. The fundamental law in that system, in the system of the philosophy of theosophy, the central point from which all emerged, and around and towards which all gravitates, there is one life, one consciousness, from which governs everything, which sustains everything, to which we go back, upon which hung the philosophy of the rest, is one homogeneous divine substance principle, spirit matter, substance principle. No one radical cause. Some few whose lamps shone brighter have been led from cause to nature's secret head, and found that one principle must be. It is called substance principle, for it becomes substance on the plane of manifestation. Its principle on the subjective plane, on the plane of manifested universe, an illusion. That is why I say, you see, when we say microcosm, it's a reflection, it's an illusion. As long as we merge ourselves with one reality, it's as the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, having controlled yourself, subdued everything from the lower point of view, he becomes one with that reality without any intermediate condition. This is important. As long as we have in our mind the duality, of mine and thine, we can never arrive at the reality. Now it says, when it remains principle in the beginningless, endless, abstract, visible, invisible space, it is the omnipresent reality. Impersonal, because it contains all and everything. Its impersonality is a fundamental conception of the system. It is latent in every atom of the universe and universe itself. That's why I say, see, universe is microcosm. Thinking man is microcosm. But unfortunately, he is involved in an illusionary world. Therefore, unless he is able to see that he is only a tool in the hands of that one reality to get in touch with nature, to garner experience, then as we said earlier, what is the very purpose of all this? And it comes again in the page 181 of Secret Doctrine. There exists in nature a triple evolutionary scheme. We can simply say it's monadic, intellectual, and then chaya or physical. But here the words are very clear. There exists in nature a triple evolutionary scheme for the formation of three periodical upadis, rather three separate schemes of evolution, which in our system are inextricably interwoven and interblended at every point. That means they can't be separated. These are monadic or spiritual, the intellectual and the physical evolutions. These three are the finite aspects of the reflections of the field of cosmic illusion. Finite aspects of illusion, cosmic illusion, of Atma, the seventh one reality. The monadic is, as its name implies, concerned with the growth and development into still higher phases of activity of the monad in conjunction with the intellectual represented by Manas Jnanis, the solar devas who gave us the Manas at some point in time during the course of evolution. Still higher levels of activity, the intellectual represented by Manas Jnanis, the solar devas, as Agrishvata Pitris, the givers of intelligence and consciousness to man. And three, the physical represented by the chayas of the lunar pitris, which nature has concreted, the present physical body, this world, and its transformations through manas, and owing to the accumulation of experiences of the finite into the infinite, of the transient into eternal and absolute. That means from the transient illusionary world, the absolute world, it is through manasic consciousness only we can arrive. Without the manasic consciousness, we can't go ahead. Now, one paragraph has been left out there due to want of space. Each of these three systems has its own laws, and is ruled and guided by different sets of highest dhyanas. Look at, each is represented in the constitution of man. The microcosm and the great macrocosm. And it is the union of these three streams in him which makes him the complex being he now is. This to be understood that, you see, macrocosm is here in the microcosm. But microcosm is another word for macrocosm. Say they should be in one place. In what way? Unless we are able to raise ourselves to the highest consciousness, all consciousness, merge ourselves with the universal consciousness, we can't become the divine being. Now, how are they represented in man? They are represented as we have again in the Einstein and text for theosophical meetings. It says, Nature is trying. The objective physical nature, the energizing invisible astral nature. And the exact order of the other and its vital principle, the above these two spirit source of all forces, alone eternal and indestructible. There are three in man also. The lower two constantly change, the higher does not change. Man is also trained. There is a physical objective man. He is his objective physical body, his vitalizing astral body, the real man. And these two are brooded over and illuminated by the third, the sovereign, the immortal spirit. When the real man succeeds in merging himself with the latter, he becomes an immortal entity. This is the whole crux of the problem. You see, the sovereign immortal, when the real man, that is inner man, succeeds in himself, in merging himself with the latter, with the sovereign spirit, he becomes an immortal entity. Why is it given? It is possible for man that realize there are three aspects in us, the physical, the inner man, the astral, and the spirit. Then whenever we are able to, by our own effort, able to merge ourselves with the latter spirit, then we become immortal. That means the idea is, the whole process of evolution is to merge ourselves and become an immortal entity. Once you become an immortal entity, then you have to willingly live the life of the spirit. Although in matter, that means we have to become recognized that we are immortal beings so that we can attain to the highest consciousness. Now let us recollect what is the third fundamental. Third fundamental talks about the human evolution. The first two are referring to the omnipresent one reality, and the second fundamental is the application of that one reality in the whole of the universe in terms of law. Deity becomes law. And the law, what is there for law? Why the law is there? Why all the evolution? As Patanjali points out, the whole universe exists for the evolution and emancipation of soul. Then how do we recollect the third fundamental proposition? What do we have? All souls are emanation from universal oversoul. When we say universal oversoul, it's not Atman, which itself is an aspect of the unknown. Beautiful words, you see how she defines that each of us are from the emanations of this universal global soul, which itself is an aspect of the unknown. And then we have been through all forms, mineral, vegetable, animal, and we have come to the stage. The peace man has got all these and much more. And during the process of evolution, that means we acquire all the experiences through all these stages, and then we acquire all that, it's all there. But when you come to the stage of man is still amanasa, that is mindless. At that time, you see what happened, as we had read out from the quotation, this is the manasa dhyanis, or Agnishvata Putris, or solar angels, gave us, lighted up our manas. And then once it was lighted up, then man becomes a free will being. Became a free will being. That means he became a self-conscious entity. That means once he becomes self-conscious, it is up to him to either move forward or backward. It's like a cat in the wall. Can you predict which side is going to jump? You can't. That means like a racist age, we are walking all the time. As man is a free agent during his stay on earth, what happens is he becomes the owner of, see, he is the, his Hans has the power of his own destiny. He becomes his arbitrator of his own law, karmic law. That means he is not only responsible for what he does, and he is responsible also for how it affects other people. The grandest noble doctrine of theosophical evolutionary processes covers right man from the lowest animal level to the mightiest Brahmandas and Jnanchuranas. The piece, it covers the entire man, entire scheme of evolution. Finally, it can blossom forth into Jnanpur, Chohan, Jnanbuddha. But it is in his hands. Because he is a free will agent, he can't think one way, the right way or the wrong way. If he goes the wrong way, then chooses the wrong way, then he is ruining himself. But if he catches the right way, right path, and tries to advance himself in the evolutionary process, he can become a Dhyani. But this whole idea is means that man cannot depend upon anyone else. The highest agent is in himself. The only comforter is Atma. That's why I said, when the universe is macrocosm, man the thinker is microcosm. But it is only a reflection. Therefore, many people discount this. They don't accept it at all because saying is an illusory word. Therefore, you are also illusory. But when the man the thinker, microcosm can become the macrocosm. That is why he has to understand the nature, not only his nature, but the entire purpose of his evolution, to serve man through altruistic means, etc., etc. And there are various obstacles, unfortunate, on the way. That means he has to control himself. And the beautiful verses are there. This is from the voice of the silence. Yet thou canst near the goal, before thine hand is lifted to upraise the fourth gate latch, thou must have mastered all the mental changes in thyself. It means all kinds of thoughts we are generating all the time. Undesirable, sometimes desirable, indifferent. See, because man is a free will being. And that's why he says, must master all the mental changes in thyself and slay the army of dark sensations that subtle and insidious. They won't say I'm coming, and enters into us insidiously. Creep unasked within the soul's bright shrine. The moment you allow that, and if you are not alert, then finished. You cannot proceed further. Whatever you achieve, you might slip back also. If thou wouldst not be slain by them, then must thou harmless make thy own creations. The progeny, nay, if thou wouldst not be slain by them, then must thou harmless make thy own creations. The children of the thoughts, unseen, impalpable, swarm round humankind. The progeny and heirs to man and his terrestrial voice. That means indication is, he is the creator of all these things. The man, the creator, can become a devil. O fearless, thou hast studied the voidness and seeming full, the fullness of the seeming void. O fearless aspirant, look deep within the well of thine own heart and answer. Knowest thou of self the powers, O thou perceiver of external shadows. This is the whole problem. Do we understand what we really are? The deep powers that are within us. We think we are simply human being coming here having a vegetative experience. See, HV also further says that man is an emanation, humanity is an emanation from divinity on its path thereto. And in the process she also points out that between the absolute and the manifested Ishvara, there is some kind of a relationship in the sense that physically and spiritually, they are one in essence. That means, whatever powers, attributes we give to the manifested Ishvara, all of them are here. That means, the manifested Ishvara, the Godhead in us, are very powerful. All Shaktis and all the attributes we give are in man. Unfortunately, we do not know those Shaktis. If you go to page 292, the volume 1, Secret Doctrine, all Shaktis are given. The seven Shaktis, I'll just read out only that, and I won't explain. It is given in the 5 years of Theosophy by Shivara, 12 signs of the Zodiac. Kanya, the sixth sign of the Zodiac Virgo, means virgin and represents Shakti and Mahamaya. It is sixth Rasi of the division, okay, Parashakti, literally the highest, then Jnana Shakti. That means the power of intellect or real wisdom. Then Ichcha Shakti, the power of the will. Most ordinary manifestation of this is accomplishing what you desire. Then Kriya Shakti, the mysterious power of thought, enables you to produce external, perceptible phenomenal results. A yogi generally performs his wonders by means of Ichcha Shakti and Kriya Shakti. Then Kundalini Shakti, the serpentine power, it can create or as well as kill, that is inherent in man. Then Mantrika Shakti, the force of power, of letters, etc., etc. You know that, how people use certain mantras for beneficent purposes, for all maleficent purposes. Modern science has but partly investigated the first, second and the fifth forces. The six forces are in their unity represented by Daivi Prakriti. The light of the Logos, the peace, is inherent in the very substance aspect of the one reality. That we don't realize. It is called, yes, first. Six forces mentioned are those six hierarchies of Gyan Chohans. At each and every head of these Shaktis are one Gyan Chohan. Well, once we understand that these are all, this man is capable of all doing this, where is man? Because he is none other than the Absolute. I mean, this is important for us to understand. We are none other than the Absolute. Unfortunately, being a free will being, we have chosen the wrong path. Or, without realizing that we can become the Creator, we are living an ordinary life. The whole point is how to live the life of a man. Living the life. I mean, we have several articles, all those things are there. How to live the life of a man. The enlightened one says, it's difficult to be born as a human being. Difficult to live the life of a man. It's difficult to hear the true law. It's difficult to get enlightenment. And Shankara, in his Viveka Chudamani, says, see, it's difficult to be born as a human being. But the most important thing is, he is an idiot. Having been born as a human being, he has wasted his whole life without knowing what he is. That is the only thing is to divine, acknowledge his divine heritage and try to seek moksha. He says in the third verse itself, having become a human being, you are wasting your life. And then he says, Manas is the cause of bondage. And Manas is also the cause of freedom. To free your mind. Well, unless you are able to control your mind, therefore, the control, the conscious concentration, attention, everything comes in here. Patanjali comes here. Ashtanga Yoga is there. There, you see, Yama, Niyama, Asana, etc. are given. we go there and meticulously follow and live the life with a pure heart, with an eager intellect and absolutely clear perception, then you will be able to. The problem is we don't realize at all. So the reading that we have today says, no, such is the Arya path, path of the Buddha's of perfection. With all, what mean the sacred scrolls? Which means thee to say, Om, I believe, is not the Arhatya kit of the Nirvanic path, etc. It means all these things are there, yet we don't believe. We don't even follow. We don't pay any heed to this. This is the unfortunate thing. Then one more quotation is there, we will see. And then we link it to this season of renewal. All is impermanent in man except the pure, bright essence of Alaya. Man is crystal ray, a beam of light immaculate within, a form of clay material upon the lower surface. That beam is the life guide and thy true self, the watcher and the silent thinker, the victim of the lower self. Thy soul cannot be heard but through thy erring body. Control and master both, thou art safe in crossing the nearing gate of balance. Now this is from the book of Golden Precepts. It is meant for daily use of Nanushravakas. That means it is intended for those people who really want to become disciples and then walk the path of occultism so that they can become a dhyana. We don't realize that. Probably we must be reading it every day, 100 times, and then not remembering even a single stanza. Now, this is very auspicious season, it is said, between Christmas and Easter. Asanam Magasisa, among the months are month of Magasisa. When Magasisa enters, begins, then we say, according to Hindus, Uttarayana has started. It's the birthday of the sun that we are celebrating. See what SPV says, let no man imagine that is mere fancy, that attaching of importance to the birth of the year. The year passes through its definite phases, and man with it, as a day can be colored, so can a year. The astral life of earth is young and strong between Christmas and Easter. Those who form their wishes now will have added strength to fulfill consistently. It says, astral life of earth is young and strong. Why is it? Only now. Because 21st of December is winter solstice. Up to then, the sun was moving southwards. On this day, its sun stops moving southwards and then back goes back to travel with Capricorn. Now what happens is this movement of the sun, as the sun moves northwards, then we get more of the warmth, the sunshine, more of something that is quickening each and every one in the whole nature. The seas buried in the bosom of the nature underneath the snow begins to prow in course of time. Therefore, it is because the pranic currents in the atmosphere and the karma, purified karma, mingle together, and if they are motivated and then activated by manasic consciousness, then it becomes absolutely pure, purifying, elevating everything in the whole nature. And therefore, it is, yes, we can absorb when motivated by manasic consciousness. That's what it is said, young and strong. And then, during this period, actually whatever you resolve will come to fruition. But how many times every new year we make resolutions Won't it break them 100 times the same day? What's happening? It's not as if you don't want to get the resolution understood and then you get it okay. No. Unfortunately, what happens is we are not very sincere. We are not paying attention to what we have done. Here it says, he wants to understand that there is a season of cyclic renewal. As there is some quickening taking place in the whole of nature, as man is not part of nature, he is part of nature and not apart from it. Therefore, there is a cyclic renewal of some regeneration taking place in man that we don't realize. Cyclic resurgence in man. Therefore, we have to take advantage of that. If we try to take advantage of that, then naturally we will be able to see and understand this is only to enable us to recognize something is happening in us and we have to take advantage of it. And then we have in the new year what is to be done in terms of character resolve. See here. She says, a person with strong will, pure heart, then wishes, best wishes to all those people during this new year, it can definitely come true. Says, happy new year to all. This seems easy enough to say, and everyone expects some such greeting. Yet, whether the wish, though it may be proceed from a sincere heart, is likely to be realized, even in the case of a few, is more difficult to decide. According to our theosophical tenets, every man or woman is endowed, this is important, endowed more or less with a magnetic potentiality, which when helped by a sincere and especially an intense and indomitable will, is the most effective of magic levers placed by nature in human hands for O or V. Let us then, Theosophists, use that will to send sincere greeting and wish of a good luck for the entire year to every living creature under the sun, enemies and relentless producers included. That means when enemies are friends, we respect the fact that we must be able to send that sincere indomitable will back by best wishes to entire humanity. Let us try and feel especially kindly forgiving to our foes and prosecutors, honest or dishonest, lest some of us should send unconsciously evil eye. For the whole process is, the resolution is something entirely different from what we have been doing. That where is the sincerity? Where is the heart quality coming in? Have you put indomitable will behind our wishes? These are all and the magnetic potentiality is there. Man is a generative great force. Man is a magnetic man. Magnetic, electromagnetic force is there, generator force. You know, from that, unless we understand what man really is, and be able to, yes, take advantage of that, we can't really resolve. Once we are able to resolve and then make use of it, then it should be safe, you can achieve anything. Now, again, it is there. It says here, in the garden of sunflower flowers, every flower turns towards the light. I hope most of us must have seen that happening. Actually, the sunflower goes straight and looks up at the sun. This is an actual fact, not a religious sentiment. This can be effected by those, why not so with us? This can be effected by those who are courageous and resolute. Thoreau pointed out that there are artists in life, persons who can change the color of a day and make it beautiful to those with whom they come in contact. The day can be colored, why not the whole year? We are all artists. We don't realize. We can paint today. And then so the life could be painted also. Persons who can change the color of day and make it plain that there are others, masters in life, who make it divine, as in all other arts. Is it not the greatest art of all? That which affects the very atmosphere in which we live, that it is the most important, is seen at once when we remember that every person who draws the breath of life affects the mental and moral atmosphere of the world and helps to color the day for those about him. Those who do not help to elevate the thoughts and lives of others must by necessity, yea, that paralyze time by indifference and our activity. Everyone lives and thinks and speaks. If all our readers have any sympathy with the Lucifer of this magazine, endeavor to learn the art of making life not only beautiful but divine, and vowed not no longer to be hampered by the belief in the possibility of this miracle, but commence Herculean task at once. Then the coming year will have been fitly assured in for the gleaming star. Now this can be done, but how? One particular quotation we didn't read specifically because of time. It will be says in volume 2 how everything is looking up to man. It is not in the course of the natural law that man should become a perfect supernary being before the seventh race or the seventh round. Yet he has all these principles latent in him from his birth. Nor is it part of the evolutionary law that fifth principle manas should receive its complete development before the fifth round. All such prematurely developed intellects on the spiritual plane in our race are abnormal. There are those whom we call the fifth rounders, even in the coming. If man is really the macrocosm or the macrocosm, then the teaching has nothing so very impossible in it. But it's logical, for man becomes a macrocosm for the three lower angels under him. Arguing from a physical standpoint, all the lower angels save the mineral, which is life itself, crystallized and immortalized, from plants to the creatures which preceded the first mammalians. All have been consolidated in their physical structures by means of the cast off dust of the refuse of the human matter, whether from living or dead bodies on which they fed and which gave them their outer bodies. Moreover, man from the beginning of the round, all in nature tends to become man. Everything points out to man, so that is called crown piece of evolution. Moreover, from the beginning of the round, all nature tends to become man. All the impulses of the dual centripetal and centrifugal force are directed towards one point, that is man. Therefore, this everything only point out to man, so that he is not only the crown piece of evolution, but he can only become a man, a creator. A few minutes is there, you can have some questions. See, we'd like to say one point, that we have specifically chosen the subject, man the creator, because theosophically speaking, January 4th is the day on which humanity, manas, was lighted up for Agni Shvata Putris. Because during that time, there in the house of Capricornus. And then that is where he is supposed to be sacred to Mercury, Buddha. That is there in your New Year beauty pamphlet. I won't do this, I won't do that. See, negative resolutions have a very little effect. In fact, they don't have any effect. The moment you say, instead of saying, I will not smoke, then I'm definitely going to give up smoking. Give up smoking. Instead of saying, no, I won't smoke. See, it should be, your whole mind should be made positive in making resolutions. Positive aspect. That means there is an assertion. That you see, otherwise, you see, I will not smoke my seat. May means may not also. But from that point of view, see, it's not right to have, if you make negative resolution, you won't succeed. But the positive attitude, the sincerity, then indomitable will should be there. See, when you say, I will not smoke, it's no indomitable will. I give up smoking. In what happens? Yes, indomitable. We will make tremendous effort to bring that will into action with the magnetic power. Then perhaps we can have the resolution coming correct.
How to make the will strong? How to make the will strong?
How to make the will strong? See, look, what do you mean by will? We have will, yes, each one of us. But general will, is it against general will or different from general will? The will, unfortunately, behind will is desire. Therefore, our will is colored by our desire. We have umpteen desires. Therefore, the will, what happened, whatever power, our will is completely dissipated. But the ones who are able to understand that is a manas, which is a culprit, that is whenever kama or the whenever mind is just 1 minute, whenever mind, the lower mind is dissociated with kama, it becomes an organ of free will in man. That means the moment you are able to completely get rid of the karmic current, karmic manasic entity, then we become actually a derived power in the higher manas. Higher manas is nothing but a vehicle for the automatic manasic prayer. Therefore, we are able to have this free will itself to function. The moment we are able to get rid of this karma, that from our mind, then it becomes an organ of the highest mental faculties. Then we will just close this. Yeah. In fact, not so when he has crossed one the Aryatapa, their Klesha is destroyed forever, Tanha's roof thrown out, but stay desirable, yet one word, can thou destroy even compassion? Compassion is no attribute, it's a lost laws, eternal harmony, alias self, a shoreless universal essence, the light of everlasting right, the fitness of all things, the law of love eternal. The more thou dost become one with that, thy being melted in his being, the more thy soul unites with that which is, the more thou wilt become compassion absolute. Thank you.